Hey everybody, it is Sunday, October 25th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 6 of the AIH 20416 podcast. I am one of the co-hosts. My name is Alan. On Twitter, you can find me at Slip, Slip with five eyes, or Slip.
Hello everyone, my name's Philip. You can find me on Twitter at Philip A. Iver, PhilipAiver.
Did you like the special twist
that
to the intro?
That was pretty good. I liked it. If anyone isn't following Slip, A, get on that. B, check out the Vine that he just posted tonight. I will say that when he and I were watching the game and that happened, we both burst out into laughter.
Phil and I had quite the experience watching the game this evening for a number of reasons. We were at my place here in Toronto, and we're watching through NHL Game Center. So to start things off, we turn on the Apple TV feed, and we're late to start the game. We're almost done the Canadian National Anthem, so I say, let's go back and hear True North.
Yep.
So we go back, we hear the anthem from the start, we hear the True North, fast forward to the game, it's 1-0 Minnesota.
Thanks, Alan.
Then, after Phil calls me out for it publicly on Twitter, He says to me, would you mind if we watch the American feed? And I am like, absolutely, let's go over to that. Les Bayak, please. So we make the switch over. It's 1-1. We missed the first two goals happening as they did for the switch over. And then your favorite part was when, for some reason, my stream started cutting into insurance commercials out of nowhere.
I really feel like we should buy Investors Group.
Just out of nowhere, in the middle of the play, an Investors Group commercial popped up twice. And then a spider.
A random still image of a spider when we tried switching back over to the TSN feed.
Yeah, so that was great.
Yep.
And
hey,
then...
Oh. Hey, at least we avoided that damn Scotiabank fifth season commercial, which we managed to not watch until we turned on the Calgary-New York game on Sportsnet.
That girl gets an F for the fifth season. F the fifth season.
No!
I don't know.
You know we've just shot our chances of ever being sponsored by Scotiabank, right?
Yes, we have. But come on, fifth season?
Hey, I've been ranting and raving about, ranting about it on Twitter for a little while now, so...
The other thing was that little clip that we heard at the start of the show there. Like, when Parise scored that wraparound goal, I never heard somebody more excited in my life than the play-by-play person for the Wild.
You would think that they just made the Stanley Cup Finals. It was that passionate. Well, I liked your interpretation. He was basically saying death to Winnipeg.
Yeah. It just all his Winnipeg hatred that had built up when they had gone down 5-1 and were making their slow comeback just came bursting out.
The Minnesota Wild announcers were more passionate about that goal than they were about the Dustin Byfuglien hit.
They were, because we switched back to the Winnipeg feed, and then there was that terrible hit. Like, let's be honest. You know what? Enough with Byfuglien and these bullshit hits and stupid penalties that he seems to regularly take in the last 3 minutes of the game.
Well, this is just me being irrational and emotional, but it's hits like that. It's hits like the vicious cross check on JT Miller's neck that make me feel a little ambivalent about Buff possibly leaving the Winnipeg Jets. And I love what he brings to the table when it's, as you always say, within the rules of hockey.
Yes.
He's a fantastic elite defenseman.
You always hear the term about people who like walk on that line or whatever they say. And it's like, to me, it's like, can you control yourself? Do you have control over your actions? And Buff hasn't had a huge history of suspensions, but you know, some of this is because we watch every game. So we see more than with other teams, but you know, every 10 to 15 games, he's good for something dirty. And he's had two already this year.
Yep.
So, but yeah, and then we went back to the Wild feed because we figured we were going to see a ton of passion from their play-by-play guys, and they were like, Wild going to the power play!
Yep, well, you know, it was a... Well, one guy used the word vicious, but he didn't, you know, it was a vicious hit.
Yeah. You're just pointing it out.
Yep, you know, it happened.
Yeah. So tonight's game, now that we've talked about it for almost 10 minutes, Jets won, by the way.
Oh, yeah, by the way, there was a hockey game and we won it.
The Jets won the game 5-4. They beat the Minnesota Wild this evening. Really, you know, got up big 5-1 off of terrible goaltending.
Yes.
That was really the story.
It's games like this that remind you why Minnesota had to go out and get Devan Dubnyk to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was not good for them. When they got down by the first four goals. Just some shitty goals there. On the Jets side, Trouba. Two goals that he got pretty schooled on. The first goal of the game where... Who scored the first goal of the game for a while?
Zucker.
Walked around him.
Yeah, he was in a bad position when that play started. And it just got more awkward as it progressed. Yeah, no, he hasn't looked good.
And the second one was Parise just lifting the stick and taking it off of him from behind the net.
Yep.
So a little rough game on Trouba's part, which I've heard quite a bit about him not exactly having the greatest start to the season, which is, you know, like he's pretty spectacular usually, and we haven't seen that, right?
He's surpassed our expectations for so long now that, you know what, everyone's going to have a bad stretch of games. It's egregious when he does, because we rely on him being that excellent defenseman who can carry around Mark Stewart. And so when one half isn't playing all that well, it's tricky enough. When they're both struggling, we see the results like we did today.
And I think the other player that you've really kind of noticed so far this season is Burmistrov, right? And noticed, maybe not noticed, is more the way to put it.
Well, I know... The only reason why I wouldn't advocate dropping him to the fourth line is because the third line as a whole, as a trio, has been productive. I mean, we had, what, another couple goals from Stafford today.
Yep.
Stafford and Lowry have at least been combining very well, and I can understand from a coach's perspective why you wouldn't want to mess up that chemistry, even if what you're seeing is a weak link on that line. Having said that, you're absolutely right. He's been underwhelming at best. And
he had a dirty elbow too, that, right?
At the very least, when he saw that replay and when he was in the penalty box, he knew it was bad.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even the first time that game that he'd had kind of a questionable hit. I noticed a shoulder or two that were kind of iffy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been another recurring theme throughout the season. I mean, again, he's coming from the KHL after being there for what? A couple seasons.
Two seasons.
I can understand there being a readjustment that's necessary for him and his game. It hopefully things bounce back as the season progresses and we get to game 20, 30, 40. And he's on a low enough contract where his salary is appropriate for the bottom six no matter where he is in there. It's hitting the point where not if the option in the press box wasn't Anthony Peluso, I would seriously consider benching him and putting him in the press
box. Oh, that's, you know what? We haven't used this sound effect on this show yet, but I'm actually going to find it for that one just because I agree with you, but I think...
I don't even think it's that bad.
Probably not, but I assume it's going to be taken with a little heat, but... I'm with you. Like, what has he done? Like, what, you know, the things that I've noticed from Burmy so far are the dirty hits, bad penalties. That's been essentially it, right? You've said in terms of some of the fantasy stats haven't been that overwhelming.
I haven't looked at his in particular for this game and Tampa's, but before then they were, again, underwhelming at best and actually towards the lower end of the team.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, if Peluso's your other option, then you're going with Burmy. Yeah. But at $1.5 million...
Isn't that much?
I think so, yeah. You can verify it.
I think you're right.
Verify it for me. Burmy's contract was a pretty nice deal, I think, for the Jets. It was a two-year contract. I think it's $1.5 million, and he's still a restricted free agent when that contract expires. So you hold the cards when it comes to the decision on what needs to happen at that point.
Well, and perhaps, and I mean, I am completely jumping the gun here, and I'm not necessarily advocating it, but bringing him back from Russia, having him signed to not just a one, but a two-year contract, if push comes to shove, it might make him a more appealing trade target.
Could.
And trade piece. And I'm not, I have no idea what the situation would be around that in terms of what's going where, but he's a viable option if you're trying to put together a bigger package.
And, you know, it's never, if that is the case, because again, we're still early into this season, yes. We've got a couple of years. If it doesn't tend to work out, you know, he's still not True North's guy, right? They inherited him from another regime. So at some point, you say, what assets can we get back? But again, it's way too early.
Oh, yeah.
We're eight games into the season now? Jets are 5-2-1, right? So yes. 8 games into the season. Anyways, it wasn't pretty. The Wild came back on them, but the Jets got the win, 5-4.
And that should put us in a three-way tie for third in the Central?
I think so. 5-2-1 record. The Central Division is just insane. You're going to need to win all the time just to stay a pace. The Jets going into this game were sixth. That put them in seventh place in the conference, but the way that the wild cards work, they wouldn't have made playoffs. You need to be fifth or better. You really need to be fourth or better to solidify it. Fifth or better, you kind of cross your fingers. The West, the Pacific Division has been crap so far, so that's going to help out your chances, but you've still got to pace yourselves with those other teams, and I believe other than Colorado, everybody else is soaring too, right? So we will see what happens. We are actually going to focus our discussion on a team over in the Pacific Division, that Pacific coastal city of Edmonton, Alberta. We're going to talk some Oilers today.
Yeah.
We have Ryan Batty coming on to the show with us. On Twitter, you can find him at Ryan_Batty, RYAN_BATTY. He is the managing editor for the Copper and Blue, which is SB Nation's Edmonton Oilers website. Before we get him on the phone, what are you dying to know?
Well, okay, I was going to go with my typical joke answer. Now, obviously, we're going to discuss Connor McDavid. Who? Yeah, wait a second. I might ask him this, but I know myself personally. I didn't follow the Crosby mania. This is really the first superstar mania that I'm fully appreciating. And I have to admit, I'm getting Connor McDavid fatigue already.
Phil and I talked about this before while the game was on. Again, there is a little age gap between him and I. The Sidney Crosby piece is the one that I was saying at the time that Crosby came into the league. There was all sorts of hype about Crosby for 2 years prior to him coming into the NHL. Where there was a lot of talk about what he was doing in Rimouski, and he played in the two World Juniors, including that 2005 World Juniors? Four or five, where they crushed every team because the NHL was in lockout, so they just put all the 20-year-old NHL players on the team, plus Sidney Crosby, and they crushed all the other teams. But it was all Crosby all the time leading up to his draft, then he was drafted, then Crosby mania kind of everywhere. A couple of differences now. One is that I don't have cable, so I only see hockey when the games are on. So I'm not seeing everything else, which is probably helping it. One of the reasons that you may be seeing more of McDavid, too, is because he's playing for a Canadian team. I don't know. I don't know if that helps.
That and, I mean, I hate to be this person, but the world is different now. You have social media. Mm-hmm. I'm not nearly the most connected person on social media. I don't even have, say, like an Instagram account. But I'm on it fairly often, so I'm constantly being bombarded by that, both from fans and from Sportsnet and TSN, etc., etc. I just love how if you're watching a Edmonton game, you have him compared to Gretzky at least 10 times a game.
Ugh. I thought it was funny when he was drafted to the Oilers, thinking immediately, well, your chances of even being the leading scorer in your own team's history are down the tubes. Like, you could never. It's kind of like when Bautista hit that home run in game 5. Mm. And I was thinking, no matter what you do, you can never hit the biggest home run in Blue Jays history.
Yeah.
But anyways, we will get Ryan on the line here right away. And let's talk some Connor McDavid and some Edmonton Oilers. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. So we've got our guest on the line from over at the Copper and Blue, which is the Edmonton Oilers SB Nation site. We have the managing editor on the line with us. Ryan Batty is joining us on Twitter. You can find him at Ryan_Batty. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good. We're interrupting the Oilers game for you to do this, so thank you very much.
Oh, glad to do it.
We were actually talking because the Jets just played as well. They got a 5-4 win over the Wild tonight. I don't know if you saw or heard any highlights from that game. But we did a kind of some talking about that, but decided that we wanted to go in a different direction for our show and get some information out of Oilers land.
Okay.
I don't know if you... I'm not exactly sure kind of what age category you fall into, but the Oilers, if you go to Winnipeg, are seen as a traditional rival of the Winnipeg Jets because we were both Smythe Division teams in the 80s. But my understanding is the Oilers are much more of a rival for the Jets than the other way around. Would you see that the same way?
I think that's a fair statement. I'm 36, so
okay. We're almost the same age.
Yeah, so I don't really remember the dynasty years. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the 90s Stanley Cup win, but other than that, I'm just not old enough, right? But I think Jets fans might look at Oilers a little bit the way Oilers fans looked at Dallas through the late 90s, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We played Dallas every year, but we were a speed bump for Dallas. I mean, they were on their way to better things every year after they finished beating the Oilers. And, you know, I think the Jets are a little bit that same way. I mean, the Oilers beat Winnipeg every time we went on to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, it's like it's a good luck thing to beat Winnipeg in the playoffs. But, you know, it wasn't – the series weren't – you know, traditionally they weren't very close. There were a couple that, looking back through the numbers or whatever, they certainly seem that way. Which, you know, I mean, that's the NHL history, but you flip it around to before both teams came into the NHL, and, you know, the Jets owned the Oilers, right, in the WHA.
So yeah.
Certainly a bit of a rivalry, and I hope, you know, we joke about it here. I would love to get back into the playoffs and beat Winnipeg on the way to Stanley Cup. That sounds like a lot of fun. I got to think it'd be a great time.
People in Winnipeg, when you guys drafted McDavid and won that lottery, were... there were quite a few tweets I know where people were saying, oh shit, like, here we go again. There was all sorts of lore surrounding when Wayne Gretzky went from the Indianapolis Racers over to the Edmonton Oilers, with a lot of rumors about, the Jets could have had him too. We lost a card game, and that's why he went to the Oilers, and, you know, that's how history was made, which ultimately, in Gretzky's own autobiographical DVD that he made about 10 years ago, he basically said, he talked to his dad, you guys were opening Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton, our arena was still not renovated for the NHL, and he figured Edmonton has a better chance of going to the NHL, so go to Edmonton, and that's what it came down to. But now a new superstar has emerged. The Oilers managed to get their mitts on him, and it's just like, is he going to be the roadblock to another, you know, Jets run for the next 10 to 15 years?
Ideally. I mean, that's what I'm hoping. I hope he, I hope McDavid is enough to just ruin the Flames' life for the next 15 years. I hope he screws Winnipeg up. I hope Vancouver doesn't have a chance. I would be thrilled. It'd be great to get that centerpiece there. And I mean, look, he's 9 games into his NHL career, got another point tonight already. He's ridiculously good. What? Like, he's absurdly good at 9 games.
So, I mean, I was going to just ask you, tell us how you really feel, but I want to know, like, what is the true sentiment across Edmonton and the city with this kid? Like, how crazy is it, and what is the limit that you see for this guy, if any?
Well, like, I think, you know, coming into this season, hyped prospects, first overall picks, we've done that in Edmonton. We're familiar with it. And so I think a lot of people wanted to sort of sit back and not put too much pressure on him, because this was different. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, a lot of a lot of fans started hearing his name 4 years ago when he was 14 years old, right? And, you know, they didn't want to put too much pressure on him. This is a team that's missed the playoffs for 9 years. You know, you got to be realistic about what he can do. And in a way, that was almost, it was almost silly, because he should have been hyped as much, if not more, than he was. I mean, he is an absolutely unbelievable talent. And, I mean, where the Oilers go this year, it's as far as he can drag them. I mean, he's maybe not the best player on the team right now, but he's pretty close. He fills a huge need for the Oilers down the middle with him and Nugent Hopkins now. They actually have two centers for the first time in I don't know how long. And, you know, it's just, he is everything that he was supposed to be. He's better defensively than I expected him to be. And, I mean, the speed is, yeah, he's made some NHL defensemen look like pylons. He makes Jake Muzzin look a little slow in the game tonight when you see the highlights. And it's just, it's every time. It took him a couple periods to get rolling, but once he did, you definitely saw what everybody was talking about before he was drafted. And, you know, to see that out of an 18-year-old kid this early is pretty impressive.
Now, it seems like Connor McDavid, he's the tide that's rising all boats. And I know someone that's benefiting from that is Neil Yakupov. In this new McDavid era, what do you think the ceiling is for Neil Yakupov, who, depending on who you talk to, it sounded like he was dangerously close to becoming a draft bust?
Yeah, Yakupov, there's probably not a player in the Oilers organization that they need something out of more than Yakupov. I mean, whether or not he ends up being a long-term Oiler, or if he's part of a trade to bring in some help on the blue line. If he's a guy who's playing at the level or close to what people expected, and you know, obviously there's the potentials there. I mean, he's a number one pick, and there wasn't, you know, there was a reason for that. With the way they're playing right now, I mean, he looks like a guy who could easily be 65 to 70 points a year. And, I mean, that's exactly what the Oilers need out of him. It gives them a ton of options all over the place, whether to trade someone else, to trade him. You know, it's a pretty big deal, and it's nice because Yakupov really is a nice guy. Like, he really does enjoy just playing hockey. You see it all the time, and that kind of got beat out of him over the last couple of years, and it's unfortunate because all he wants to do is go out there, shoot the puck, score goals, and have fun. And he's doing that again, and it's nice to see, and he certainly seems like a guy who deserves to catch a break. And it seems like the instant chemistry he's found with Connor McDavid is, you know, it's a nice thing to watch.
How do you think that instant chemistry has affected Leon Draisaitl's future in the Oilers organization?
Draisaitl's an interesting prospect because, you know, I sort of thought, especially with the injury to Jordan Eberle, that would be the reason he stayed, you know, that it would be tougher to send him down. But the Oilers seem to want to play him at center. They see him as a centerman in the NHL. And so, you know, they've got him down in, I was going to say Oklahoma City, but it's Bakersfield now. Uh-huh. And, you know, they're still playing him at center. And even with another injury to a winger, you know, they still didn't bring him back up. So I don't think that anything really is affecting Draisaitl's future with the Oilers right now, other than there are going to be two very good centermen ahead of him on the depth chart for a long time in McDavid and Nugent Hopkins. I guess they could always move Nugent Hopkins, but I think they're going to look at a situation where they try to get all three of them into the Oilers lineup for a few years and, you know, see what they can do with that kind of depth down the middle. It's going to be, if it works out, then be quite the combination they could run for sure.
So you've got Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, Connor McDavid. You've got Taylor Hall. You've got, not at center, but you've got Taylor Hall. You've got Jordan Eberle. Lots of extremely talented young forwards, which even before McDavid, the Oilers had plenty of going for them. There's always been talk that at some point, perhaps you need to move an asset to gain on the blue line or even in net. Do you still feel that way, or is that something you've ever felt?
I think they're going to have to move something, partly to make room. And, you know, it's hard to say, like, you know, it's not even who they're making room for, but just they're going to get pinched a bit on contracts, and they can't have big money playing, you know, down on the third line or whatever, right? So as guys come along, they're going to have to do something. I don't think that they're going to need to move any of those kind of assets to find a goaltender. I'm of the opinion that you can keep your goalies fairly cheap. Don't go out and spend big money on it. They tend to be fairly replaceable, in my opinion. I also don't like goalies, so they are what they are. You guys have one that I can't stand, for example, so, I mean, I don't want to go down.
Is it the same one? Hutchison?
I'm thinking, is it the same one that I can't stand?
I would assume, yes.
Is it Pavlik?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, so, that said, I do think they could do something with some of their forward depth to address the defense, and the defense is still the weakest part of this team. I mean, it's just not good. They've got some guys. I mean, obviously Darnell Nurse is going to be here in the near future. Oscar Klefbom looks to be pretty good. You know, they made a trade for Griffin Reinhart, so there's three relatively young guys. Other than that, though, they don't have a lot that's really right there. I mean, they're trying with Schultz, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be anything more than a number four defenseman, and I'm not sure he's a number four defenseman. They got a couple other guys that, you know, maybe show up in a few years out of the system, but, you know, they're still more suspect than anything else. So, you know, I think the most likely thing that ends up happening is they make a trade with someone out of that amazing group of talented forwards to try to address the defensive need. And I think that might be more of a next summer type thing than they're just going to spend this year evaluating everything and figure where they're going to go from there. But I think it will happen sooner or later.
If you were to take a guess, or maybe if you were to advocate the copper and blue position on it, which of the forwards would you be least upset about seeing move?
I got to think it comes down to either Eberle or Yakupov. I think it's one of those two that goes. You know, I really like Yakupov, and for that matter, I like Eberle. But I think it's probably those two guys. They're probably going to be hesitant to move Draisaitl, if for no other reason than until he establishes himself in the NHL, he's not going to bring back a big name, whereas the other guys probably could. I don't see them moving Taylor Hall, and I don't see Nugent Hopkins going anywhere anytime soon. So I think it kind of comes down to those two guys on the right side, and they'll pick one. And that's where, like I said before, Yakupov playing so well with McDavid is huge, because it gives the Oilers an option. I mean, if you're going to go out and trade Eberle not knowing what Yakupov can do, well, that's a pretty big gamble. And you couldn't trade Yakupov, you'd get pennies on the dollar last year. So, you know, seeing that is going to be something that gives the Oilers a ton of options as they look to build this team into something a little bit better for the rest of this year and beyond.
Now, you mentioned not wanting to spend a high price on goalies. What did you think of spending a second, third, and seventh on Cam Talbot? And what have been your first impressions of him?
I think it's a fairly reasonable price for Talbot. He's an interesting guy in that, you know, he doesn't have a long track record, obviously, but there's a lot of arrows pointing in the right direction, I would say, with him. He's a guy that, you know, could certainly be a number one goalie in the NHL, and so far has looked very much like that for the Oilers. They played a couple of games early in the season that, you know, if they'd got the goaltending like they got the last 2 years, games would have been over in the first 5 minutes. And, I mean, they still lost, but he gave them a chance to win. What the Oilers have been searching for a long time, seems like literally for 5 or 6 years now, is really just average goaltending. They don't need elite level goaltending, and elite level goaltending is great, but the difference between that and average isn't very much. He can certainly do that, probably even a little bit better than average, and it's just going to be a matter now of trying to get a deal in place, assuming he continues to play the way he is, trying to get a longer-term contract, 3 or 4 years for him, early in January when they can get an extension done before they're, you know, paying big dollars, because I don't think there's a lot of value in them doing that. They've got Laurent Brossoit coming as well, who looks to be like a fairly good prospect, so they don't want to tie up a a ton of money and a ton of years in a position where they might have a guy knocking on the door in, you know, maybe 1 or even 2 years.
Now, with respect to Darnell Nurse and Oscar Klefbom, you folks are famous in recent years for drafting those young, dynamic forwards. Have the Edmonton Oilers hit the point where they need to draft by according to positional need as opposed to best player available?
They're probably there. They were probably there a year ago, if not more. But I guess if you keep winning the lottery, and I mean the Oilers are good at winning the lottery, your hand is forward, sort of forced, right? I mean you're gonna take the best player and figure it out. You know, I do think at this point that might be something that they do look at, and you know maybe if they're not gonna, you know, if they are thinking solidly about drafting the best player available wherever they end up in June, you know, if that's a forward, maybe they do look at trading down again. And trying to get a defenseman that way, because yeah, the logjam of forwards is becoming pretty remarkable, and there really isn't a lot with the defense. I mean, their three best defensive prospects are likely all going to be in the NHL by the end of the season. So, and after that, you've got no one coming for at least probably 2 years.
Okay.
So they've definitely got to start finding something else there to make sure they're not running a little bit bare when it comes to defensemen.
Now, kind of sticking with the draft, where is it you think the Edmonton Oilers will finish in the standings this season, and where is it you hope they will? Because I look at a team that's still missing a number of pieces, and I figure it might not be the worst thing to still end up in the bottom five.
I think they're probably a little better than that. I would be surprised, I think, if they're much outside of the top 10. I can see them. Their division is awful, yeah. So they can actually pick up a few games in division if they play well. I could see them finishing maybe in the 11th, 10th spot in the conference, which, okay, you know, is a remarkable improvement from where they've been. You know, they're a team that can, like we talked about this, you know, on our site, that the problem with the Oilers is that they weren't bad last year. They were terrible. I mean, when you finish with 62 points, you're 50% more points from just missing the playoffs. Like that's fantastic. So they're a team that can be, you know, 12, 13 wins better and still miss the playoffs by a good chunk. And I sort of see that being where they end up this year. So I see them probably somewhere in the drafting in the 8, 9, 10 range. And of course, you know, I expect we'll win the lottery from there and pick first again. So, you know, that'll be fun. But I seriously, at this point, anywhere in the bottom
14 gets you a lottery ticket, and now everyone's going to be like sitting there. That's going to be the running joke, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the Oilers, okay, so the Oilers won the lottery finishing last. Then they finished last and lost the lottery, but the rule let them keep the top pick. They won from second last. They won from third last. I mean, we've done it every which way you can. I mean, we're draft lottery champions. And we're the absolute best. We're a dynasty at that. So I wouldn't count us out as long as the Oilers are missing the playoffs and have a 1% chance. Mm-hmm. I'd say they got a good shot.
Now, when you folks finally make the promised land again and arrive in the playoffs, who will be the captain of the Edmonton Oilers?
Taylor Hall.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be, I think they're probably a playoff team next year. I think they should be pushing for the playoffs next year, and I think Taylor Hall will be the captain pretty much going into that season. I think they tipped their hand a little bit when it was announced that McDavid was going to live with Taylor Hall, and I think that's just the Oilers saying, like, look, we want a little bit more out of you as a leader, and, you know, here's the keys to the kingdom, so to speak. Don't screw it up. And, you know, assuming he doesn't screw it up, and I don't think he will, I think they're going to say, okay, you're the leader for the next 3-4 years, and, you know it, I know it, everybody knows it, it's going to be Connor McDavid at some point, but it doesn't have to be him today, we're just going to let him play hockey, and, yeah, you can lead this thing. So, it's going to be interesting in Edmonton, because a lot of people don't like Taylor Hall. There's a lot of complaining about the guy. I don't quite get it, but there's a big portion of the fans that don't like him. So if I am right and it is Taylor Hall, the whining will be pretty fantastic.
is some of that whining due? I was just actually going to ask you about the Taylor Tyler draft. Does some of that whining have to do with the fact that is there regret amongst the fan base that Tyler Seguin wasn't taken with that first pick?
There is from some people. I think the bigger thing is that, you know, this team just hasn't been very good. And so we're starting to get this, like, idea that, well, they've never won with Taylor Hall, so Taylor Hall must be the problem. I'm like, well, that's not quite how it works, right? I mean, if the Penguins don't make the playoffs, it's probably not one guy's fault. It's probably not because Sidney Crosby's not very good. It's, you know, it's
probably the probably Kessel, roster. Right?
Yeah. If it's anybody, it's Kessel. So, but yeah, like, I think too many people focus at the top and just say, well, I mean, if he's the best player, he should do it. But, I mean, he's playing 18, 19 minutes a night. There's a limit to what any player can do if they're playing a third of the game, right? So it's kind of come from that. And, you know, he's had some injuries, so there's some questions there about, you know, whether or not he's injury-prone. And I think that's kind of nuts. His injuries haven't been the kind of thing I'd be worried about recurring. But, yeah, for whatever reason, there is a group of fans in Edmonton. They're very vocal. They just don't like the guy. He seems to be treated differently than Nugent Hopkins is, Eberle is, even Yakupov for that matter. It's just as if Taylor Hall was the first one, and he's supposed to have led this team single-handedly to a Stanley Cup, despite the fact that management has been unable to build a defense or find a goaltender for the last few years. I mean, I don't know how that falls at his feet for responsibility, but that is the prevailing opinion.
Now, you mentioned management. I was wondering, how much hope did you personally have for the Craig McTavish-Dallas Eakins regime?
I had a lot. A lot. I wasn't too sure maybe about McTavish. It was one of those things. The Oilers like to hire guys that used to play here.
And you don't say.
Oh, it's nauseating. But, you know, he was a guy that, you know, at least I could sort of figure it out. I knew what he was generally thinking, and I didn't dislike it. I thought the Eakins hire was solid. I liked, you know, the way he talked about the game and the things he said he wanted to do. Unfortunately, he was just unable to ever get that to transition to the ice. You know, I think he certainly got sunk by some things that I don't know I would blame him for. I mean, If you get like .895 goaltending for a couple months to start every season, I mean, you're just not going to make the playoffs. Doesn't matter what you do.
We're familiar with that.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think he was going to the goalies and saying, "Hey guys, don't stop the puck tonight." So, you know, if the goalie doesn't stop him, what's the coach going to do? And that's what the Oilers got the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, they were eliminated from the playoffs effectively by Halloween. I mean, that's a long, long year if that's the way it starts, right? But I think last year when they did make the change from Eakins, it was the right thing to do. I mean, whether or not he was the problem, hard to say. But, you know, when you're losing 10, 11 games in a row, well, he's probably not part of the solution. So go a different route. And I am shocked that they were able to end up getting, you know, the guys that they did bring in. I mean, they got some pretty premier guys in Chiarelli and in McClellan. But again, I think that's directly traceable to four ping pong balls in April going the Oilers' way, right?
Let's take a quick break from the show to go over a few plugs. We are on Twitter. At AIH20416 is the handle, so find us there. My name is Alan. You can find me on Twitter at Slip. That's Slip with five I's, or Slip. And my co-host, Phil Ivor, can be found at Philip A. Ivor, PhilipAiver. So find us over there. Look up Arctic Ice Hockey at Arctic Ice Hockey over on Twitter as well, or at arcticicehockey.com. That is the SB Nation blog for the Winnipeg Jets. All of your Winnipeg Jets news and notes can be found on that site from all of their great writers. Our links are also there for this podcast. There is also a second podcast called AIH Superfans. You can find them on Twitter at AIH Superfans. Go follow them and hear their show as well for a different perspective on the Winnipeg Jets. You can also email us. We are AIH20416@gmail.com. send us a note if you want to recommend a guest, if you want to be a guest on the show. We'd love to hear from you and love to get different opinions about all of the teams across the National Hockey League, as well as about our home team, the Winnipeg Jets. So with all that being said, let's get back to the podcast.
I'm going to take this in a very different direction, and this is very old news that I want to ask you about, but Phil and I are here, we're talking a little bit about Oilers history before we got on the phone. Do you think that I think in Winnipeg we credit to a certain percentage of the Jets coming back towards the salary cap, and that was the result of the 2004-2005 lockout. Do you think that lockout saved the Oilers franchise?
The Oilers were in kind of a weird place at that point. I think it probably does, because, you know, like, the Oilers had a management, or not a management group, but an ownership group, and it was like 20 guys or something all ponied up to buy the Oilers and keep it here. And I'm not sure, you know, if there hadn't been a salary cap, that they would have been able to continue to do it, especially when you got that many guys. And, you know, I think you guys are familiar, Alberta might have a couple of dollars invested in oil.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when the price of oil goes down, suddenly businesses can't necessarily shell out millions of dollars to fund a hockey team or offset losses. And, you know, if they hadn't had the salary cap, not sure it would have worked out. Now, I mean, for the last few years, the dollar's been great, and I think the Oilers have been a money-making team. They've also been sold out. I mean, the Oilers have been basically sold right out since that lockout, and maybe they missed one game, I think, the entire time, which, considering they've been terrible for 9 years of it, is
you got
something,
one,
something impressive.
You got one Stanley Cup final, and you traded it for, what, 9 years of of nothing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to do all over again, I'd still take the game seven. It was a lot of fun, but geez, the 9 years that followed, like, couldn't you get a little something out of it, like anything? But they just never did, right? So, but no, I think, you know, ultimately the salary cap, it certainly helps, makes owning the Oilers a little bit simpler, because you know what you're spending, right? And you can only worry about what's coming in the door as opposed to how much you're putting out, because that's a fixed amount. So yeah, I think it definitely helps the Canadian teams, especially when the dollar's slipping and in Alberta oil isn't what it once was. So yeah, definitely a good thing.
And at that time we had, what, Guerin leaving town, Waite leaving town, Curtis Joseph leaving town, Pronger came in for a year, though that was after the salary cap, but the Oilers were that feeder system almost for the rest of the NHL for people to snag players. And also at the time you were not even close to having a new arena like you have now. Like, that wasn't even, I know this, I lived in Edmonton in 2001 2002, so that wasn't even in the discussion at that point. It was kind of like, we need to see how this lockout and the salary cap situation unfolds before we know what is happening with this team, right?
Yeah, that was a lot of it. And really what the Oilers were, I mean, it's a little ironic, like, they were a much better run team before the salary cap. They made way more mistakes with bad contracts, bad trades, bad free agent signings after the salary cap. And they, you know, there were limitations on it. Like, when they physically couldn't spend the money, like, they didn't have it to spend, they were way better off. They did a lot better work, and they got a lot more out of very little. And, you know, it was those trades. It was getting, you know, Doug Waite when he was traded away, and Arnon and Guerin, and I mean, the list is pretty long. But yeah, it's kind of an ironic thing that Kevin Lowe did okay when he had when he had a budget that he had to stick with, and then when the league imposed a budget on him, he was just lost. Other than one good year, I mean, the Pronger trade was a good one. That was, you know, that was a, I think it was a bit of an issue with St. Louis. They had to move him, but, you know, he made a lot of good trades that year, and it was like he used up everything his allotment for life, and it was bad after that. And then, you know, Tambellini comes in, and I mean, he couldn't find his ass with two hands and a map, so that was less fun.
it seemed like this whole issue with Rogers Place and building this arena took forever, and I'm sure it took felt longer for people living in Edmonton, but now that, your arena is being constructed and I believe slated to be open next season, is there excitement over this new arena now?
Oh, there absolutely is. It's a project that, I mean, if you go back through the Copper and Blues archives, which would be fun, you'll see a lot of opposition to it. And I mean, I wrote thousands and thousands of words, you know, saying this isn't it isn't a good deal for Edmonton. And I still believe that. I don't think the city of Edmonton struck a very good deal with the Oilers ownership group here. That said, the deal is done. The arena is being built, and so, you know, for better or worse, it is what it is. So what we have to do now is make sure that we, you know, as a city, we push for all those little extras that get talked about. You know, make sure that, you know, the public art is what you want, that, you know, everything is there, and be excited about it. I mean, we're spending the money. We're spending $500 million here, and it's going to be, well, it's going to be the best arena in the league when it opens. It'll be the best arena in the league till someone else builds an arena, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, get excited. They're going to make a big deal about it this year, being the last year at Rexall Place, and I'm going to be a little bit depressed when the last game is played. I mean, I've seen hundreds of games there, and you know, it'll never be the same in the new arena. It's going to be a little more corporate, and it's big money. Like, we're certainly going away from the days where families owned season tickets. It's going to be more and more businesses, so it, you know, it's going to be different, but it is what it is, right? Just enjoy it, go out and cheer the team when you can, and enjoy the old arena while it's still there.
It's been 8 years since I've been in Rexall Place, but it's not a bad arena, right? Like, as a fan, for a fan experience, maybe with the exception of that upper deck section where they kind of tuck away the people that pay the least amount of money. But if you're not in that upper section, it's a pretty good experience.
If you're going and you just want to watch the game, I think it's a fine place to watch a game. Like I said, I've watched hundreds of games. I've been a season ticket holder. This is my 10th year. So, you know, you'll want to do the math on how many playoff-free seasons that would be, every single one of them. But, yeah, if you're just going to watch the game, it's fine. You know, the sight lines are good. The angles, there's not really a bad seat in there. That said, it doesn't have the modern amenities that an NHL arena has. It's got plenty of long lines, and you can't really move around on the concourse during the intermissions. But, like I said, I mean, I'm there to watch hockey and have a couple beers and randomly, you know, yell at the fourth line when they do something I don't understand, which is every time they play.
Again, sounds familiar.
Yep. Well, I saw Luke Gazdick fighting tonight in an absolutely, like, it was his first shift of the night, the puck's dropped, and he's got to get in a scrap. I'm like, what does this have to do with the game, right? So, there, if I had been at the game tonight, I could have shouted randomly at that and then walked away, and it would have been, you know, standard fare, but I'm certainly not a guy that thinks Rexall Place is a terrible arena. Again, there's some that do, but like I said, if you're just going to watch hockey, I think it's a fine arena, and the new one it'll be good too. It'll just be a little bit different. Wider seats though, so I can put on a few pounds and still enjoy the game, I guess.
Well, I know for us watching that fight, it was worth it to hear the punch-out music afterwards.
Oh yeah, they play Mike Tyson's punch-out when the fights are happening.
They started that last year at some point. I was at a game and I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, I know the music, and I was like, really? This is what we're doing now? Like, okay. And then didn't hear it for a while, and I think I actually tweeted the Oilers about it that I wanted to hear it some more. And then the next game there was again. So I'm like, oh, this is a thing. I think we need more of this. Like, they had some Blades of Steel music there this year. Yeah, old video games, definitely steal from that. It's always entertaining. And it's fun when you can see the people who are hearing it and they're trying to place it. And you don't want to help him out because you're like, well, is he going to figure it out on his own? Or, you know, is he going to just sit there and is he going to, like, haunt him all night? Like, what the hell was that? So.
Me and Phil had that one. We knew it right away. For me, part, well, because I loved the game. And actually, when I lived in Edmonton, this is 2001. It was, let's just say it was a long year. But one of my biggest accomplishments was I figured out how to finish Mike Tyson's punch out. So yeah,
I think I passed it once.
Yeah, yeah. So, and also the music is actually the inspired the theme song for our other podcast on Arctic Ice Hockey, and I'm going to give them a shout out, those lousy super fans.
Just two final questions for me. I know here in Winnipeg, we have a situation with one of our better defensemen in Jacob Trouba, where he's an RFA coming off of his ELC. You folks in Edmonton locked up a player with even less of a resume than Trouba in Oscar Klefbom. I wanted to ask you, is that contract already a bargain? And if not, how long until it is?
It's probably not a bargain. Well, I guess I was going to say it's not a bargain this year, but he's not on it this year, so it doesn't really count that way. He's a player that obviously, you know, I think he's got a lot of upside. The nice thing about that deal is that, you know, it's at a fairly workable price, and really for him to pan out, like for it to just even break even, he doesn't have to be very good, right? He has to be, you know, he has to be a top four defender, and I think that's a near certainty in this case. So, you know, maybe it's a little long if you're locking up and that's all he turns out to be. But I think he's going to be a lot more. And so from that perspective, it's hard to see a way that deal doesn't work out to be quite a steal. And it could be one where, like, late next year, you're looking at it and saying, this guy's an absolute deal. Like, it's got a pretty quick return on it, I think.
Now, I noticed on the Copper and Blue, you folks have a series of articles where you ask three questions of your next opponent. What three questions would you have for Arctic Ice Hockey?
Do you guys want to trade us Dustin Byfuglien? Like, for nothing?
When you said the first part, I was going to say absolutely.
For nothing's kind of iffy.
You know, I know you don't want to, you had mentioned, you know, not necessarily paying much for goaltenders, but we've got a couple of nice ones besides the one that we all don't like so much. Though I'm going to say, I'll go on record as saying he's been better. He's been fine this season so far, but we've got a couple of good prospects if you're looking for something.
I think, you know, Byfuglien's a name that always gets talked about here in town, and he's the guy that I think would draw the most interest from Oilers fans. I don't know, like he seems like he's a fairly divisive guy here as well. Like, I mean, there's guys that like what he does and fans that don't, and I guess I'd honestly like to, from your perspective, like, is he that same guy in Winnipeg as well, where there's like you either love him or you hate him? Is there any middle ground with the fans there?
I would say that there's, if I'm going to divvy it up, Byfuglien's had an interesting time in Winnipeg. There have been times where a lot of people have called for him to be traded. I was in that camp, though it wasn't due to poor play. I've always been a trade buff because he's not going to be there when this team is making Stanley Cup runs, and so grab young assets for him. And now we're at the last year of his current contract, and no new deal in sight for him. So that's why I called for it. There was also calls to move him up to forward, which was not very popular amongst the Arctic Ice Hockey community, and for good reason. If you're paying $5 million to a guy to play third line minutes, he doesn't want to be up there. And then last year, because half our defensive core suffered from quote unquote injuries, they were forced to move him back to defense, and all of a sudden he had a all-star season. So at this point in time, I'd say a good 75% of the fan base loves Dustin Byfuglien. Buff can do no wrong. He was in the right with the whole Evander Kane situation. Like, thank you, Buff, for throwing Evander Kane's tracksuit in the shower. And then there's probably the other 25% that would say he can do quite a bit of harm. And tonight was another example. 3 minutes left in the game against Minnesota. It was Pominville, I believe. He tripped up Pominville, which didn't get a penalty, but then decided to shove his hip into Pominville's head and putting him into the boards, which is stupid and reckless, and also just for the game's sake, he takes a bad penalty with 3 minutes left, which is something that Byfuglien does. That's just what he does, and so it's that stuff that I think drives people crazy. I'd say it's about 50-50 on re-signing him.
Yeah.
No one wants to let him walk for nothing. But when it comes down to, we're going to have to sign him for at least 6 years. Do we want to have a large, you know, the giant contract on our books for Byfuglien for another 6 years minimum? Probably 50-50. I'm looking at Phil. I don't know if...
The problem is that I don't think many of us trust our general manager to trade Byfuglien. And so we're stuck with a situation where do we want to risk having this contract bite us in 4 years?
You know, to be honest with you, you probably don't have to trade us. You might just have as much of a shot at him as anyone else at the end of this year. Just wait.
Just make sure you got his phone number on July 1st.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's question one.
Yep. Question two.
I was going to actually rip on your goalie, but I won't, because you guys don't like him any more than I do.
I mean, what, you know what? Ask us, because, you know what, if we'll... at this point, I never thought I'd be saying this, but I've got mostly positive feedback on Pavlik, at least from the start of this year, and even last year for the last, you know, month or so. He did, you know, pitch 3 shutouts and helped us get into the playoffs, and this year he's been good.
And to give a little bit of a shout out, In Goal magazine actually recently put out a article detailing some of the technical changes that Pavlik has implemented in his game. And so the hope is that this isn't just a blip, that this is the new norm moving forward. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And no, that certainly would be nice. I mean, for, cause he again, right. I mean, he's got some years and everything else, and there's been some struggles, and he certainly seems like it's all goalies. They have the weirdest career curves. Yeah. And, I mean, if he's made some technical changes, then, I mean, that certainly bodes well for you guys, hopefully.
Well, and we've got so many people that are just dying to do the I told you so's, but I'll never bet on somebody that has 6 poor seasons all of a sudden turning it around.
Yeah.
It's just too big a sample size for me, but mm-hmm. and if this all falls apart, I'll be fighting hard to be first in line to say, see, it's Pavlik. Pavlik. But so far this season, that's not been the case.
Well, and if it sticks together, I mean, oh no, we have a legitimate starting goaltender. This is terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
we've had this here less after the Oilers gave up 7 goals on Friday night, but it was like, you know, should the Oilers start Talbot or Anders Nielsen? Like, you know, that's a good problem to have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, and not, should we start this guy or that guy because they're both a tire fire and we're trying to figure out which one might not be too terrible tonight. They're both really playing good and could give us a chance to win. Like, this is a new and fun problem to have.
Well, we may have an interesting question with Pavlik coming up next year, because he's going into the final years of his contract next year and will be an RFA. And again, a UFA.
Mm-hmm.
And we have goaltenders in the pipeline that, like, Hellebuyck at this point seems like a surefire starting goaltender in the NHL. I think it's going to be shocking if that's not what he ends up being. I don't know if he'll be great, but I think that he's going to get that opportunity. So the question then is, Pavlik, can you get any return for him? Because mm-hmm. he's probably not your goaltender of the future. You want him?
I'll pass.
Do you have one more for us?
Sure. The playoffs last year obviously didn't quite...
I know, I blinked and I missed it.
Honestly though, like, I mean, how good is that for a fan base that, I mean, obviously, you know, as much fun as I will make fun of Winnipeg, and I do, and I'm coming to Winnipeg for Grey Cup, and I'll make fun of it when I'm there for that as well. But, you know, I mean, it's got to be brutal to have your team go away and not, you know, for largely things that are outside of your control, just the economics of the game. But to get that back, to get that sort of second chance, and then to finally get back into the playoffs, like, does that just bring kind of everything full circle? Like, what does that do for the fan base as a guy who's been a season ticket holder for 9 years and hasn't seen a playoff game?
You've never seen a fan base so pumped up to lose hockey games. And this has always been what the fan base has been in Winnipeg is that we've, you know, like we go all out. And I'm going to give it that 75-25 split. 75% of me loves it because you're right. This is a town that hasn't seen, to us, playoff success is playoffs. Like, mm-hmm. making the playoffs is what success is. I don't even know what the hell would happen in Winnipeg if we won a playoff series. Like, we'd probably burn the city down because we've never seen it. The last time that a playoff series was won in Winnipeg was 1987 for the NHL. Our last Grey Cup was 1990. So we're talking now 25-year-olds who have not seen championships or real playoff success in Winnipeg. That part is exciting. The part that kind of gets me sometimes is I think the fans sometimes really try to make it about themselves. It's like, well, we lost, but did you see us? Did you see how loud we cheered and how we dressed and everything that we did as a fan base? So that gets a little like I'm of the mindset that every team has great fans. You know, some more than others, but every team has great fans. It was a big deal this time around because there is some sort of folklore with regard to the playoffs that the Jets had back in the original incarnation of the team. And now you've got a new generation who are pumped up to experience it. And they decided to go in the direction where we're going to do the same as what we did before. We're going to do the whiteout. So you have this arena full of fans draped in white, and the only thing in the arena that isn't wearing white is your team, who are out there in blue. But it was intense. It was crazy. The city for 6 days was, you know, the only other time I've seen it that energized was when they announced the team coming back in 2011. And so those things are always going to be great for your city. And hopefully the next time it happens, it will last a little longer. And I'm in Toronto now. I was in Winnipeg when all this happened, but if they get a round or two into the playoffs, I'll do everything I can to get back home and see it because I've never seen anything like it. And you obviously experienced that at least in the last decade with the one playoff run and all the madness up and down White Avenue, right?
Oh, it was chaos. It was I actually got my season tickets. I got them in March of 06, and just because I did the math. And I said, well, you know, it used to be the mini pack holders got priority. And I'm like, oh, there's too many mini packs now. And there's too many people going to games. So I contacted the Oilers and said, you know, are you guys going to, how's this work? I said, well, no, priority draw. So if you want to be guaranteed, you got to get season tickets. And I had talked to girlfriend at the time, wife now, about, you know, maybe we'll get season tickets, you know, maybe next year or the year after. And so I talked her into it. And, you know, by the end of that run, she broke her foot the night of the first playoff game, was almost out of a cast by the time it was over. We were basically broken eating Kraft dinner, I think, because we weren't going to not go to the games, but they were getting expensive, right?
Yes.
Like, every night. Like, I don't know that I got any work done for 2 months.
Like, it was insane. It was great.
Every day, all you did was you either prepped for the game that night or thought about the game the night before or prepped for the game that night, and it just every day for like 2 months, right? And it was, yeah, I almost can't remember it anymore. Almost. And you know, I think when we get back to the playoffs someday, it's going to be absolute lunacy in this town, and I hope it's more than 6 days the first time, but at this point I think I'd take even that. And you know, I'm sure Winnipeg will find a way to get another run there. I don't know if it'll be this year or not, but
well, we waited. Count them out. Yeah, we waited almost 20 years to get one, but we didn't have a team for 15 of them, so we only had to sit there with three non-playoff seasons, and even then, we were at least in it. So I can imagine, like, when you say the team is out of it by Halloween, it's true, and that's got to be, like, your season is done in November, I can't even imagine.
Oh, so. It's so hard, and, you know, fine, but you know, when it's after 8 years without the playoffs and there it is again, right? And this year we lose the first four coming out and everybody's getting nervous, you know, even with Connor McDavid, and it's just that feeling, right? It's like, oh, are we doing this again? Like, are we a bottom three team, or how bad is this? And just Edmonton's pretty fragile right now. We just gotta win like one game a week every week to just keep people from jumping off the high level, I think.
I have one more question before we wrap things up.
Mm-hmm.
This is famous across Winnipeg, but the Hockey News last year famously predicted that the Winnipeg Jets would be the 2019 Stanley Cup champions. If the Oilers end up being the team that spoils that prediction, do you think that that will be the first cup of many, or do you think that it will be the second or third of the dynasty that's already in place?
Probably the first. Probably the first. And I know, you know, Edmonton, I think, naturally believes that we're gonna take Connor McDavid, a couple other guys, and we're gonna go out and we're gonna win three cups in 5 years, or four and six, or something like that. And I think that's absolutely nuts. I think if you're measuring the success of this rebuild, I think we're on the seventh version of it, if you're measuring the success of it on the number of cups you win, you're doing it wrong. Winning Stanley Cups in this day and age is not like winning Stanley Cups in the 1980s. You know, the Oilers coming out of the Smythe had a couple of years there where your first round opponent, I mean, they had almost twice as many points in the standings.
Yes, that's really true.
that is really
maybe
true.
Even more. There was a year I was showing it to Phil where I think the Jets made the playoffs with 59 points.
Yeah,
so and the Oilers were like 120 or something. Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, like the parity of the league has made it, you know, very, very difficult to win even a single round. And to win 16 games, you have to have so many things break right for you. I mean, that's why I find it remarkable what Chicago's done. Even LA winning twice in the short time frame that they did is quite impressive. If the Oilers come out all of this with a Stanley Cup, I will be thrilled. If they manage to get two, great. All I want is a team that is consistently among the best in the NHL, a team that you can look at every year and say, you know, they should be in the second round of the playoffs. If everything breaks right, they're in the conference final. And at that point, you're flipping. It's a coin flip, right? I mean, you lose, Edmonton knows this, you lose a goalie in the wrong place, you don't win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You lose, you know, it's injuries. It's just, it's there's so much luck. And so, yeah, I hope we get one because it would be great. As a fan, I always said all I ever wanted to see was a Stanley Cup final game. And I saw that already. So now I got to like, okay, now I want to see a Stanley Cup because I'm greedy and I'm going to ask for something else. Beyond that, though, you know, I hope we get there quick. We get there soon while everybody's still young and before I'm 50. But yeah, after that, if there was ever even a second one, I'd say that's the most you can hope for.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. I imagine we'll have you back on over the course of the season because our teams are going to lock horns.
Yeah, a couple times.
And probably over the course, if we have longevity to this podcast, over the coming few seasons, because I think we've got two young teams that could be fighting at the top of the Western Conference in the very near future, and that would be great. You know, I'm sure you're going to cheer for your team and we'll cheer for ours, but it's great for the game and it's great for both of these franchises. So Ryan Batty joined us today. Thank you very much. Head over to thecopperandblue.com where Ryan is the managing editor, and that is the Sports Blog Nation website for the Edmonton Oilers. You can also follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan_Batty. And the Copper and Blue, what is the handle on Twitter?
Copper and Blue, Copper, like Guns and Roses.
Okay, at Copper and Blue over there on Twitter to give them a follow. So thank you very much once again.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye. So there you have it.
That was very interesting.
Uh huh. What was the most interesting thing that you took from that?
Ooh, there's a number of things. Okay, I'll stick with the Edmonton Oilers for a little bit. I was very surprised to hear that there's a disparity in reaction to Taylor Hall versus everyone else, and that everyone else included Neil Yakupov. Because outside of, and this is one of those things where if you're not in the city, you get a different narrative. Outside of Edmonton, the narrative has always been that Neil Yakupov is the one who doesn't fit in.
Well, he's the one that's been the most obvious bust if you look at being a number one pick and what he's delivered, all-star appearances, points, all that kind of business. Because Taylor Hall so far has had a pretty nice statistical career, right?
Yep.
But I guess if you're the first guy and you saddle the team, I mean, to a much lesser extent, right? But some people, I might be guilty of this, have hitched that cart to Scheifele because Scheifele was the first pick, right? Mm-hmm. He was the seventh overall, and this is the kid, and look what he's done, right? Now, I think that that'll be different if we ever draft one overall, which I don't think is in the cards for this team at any point in time, but he was the first of the ones that went, and it could have been Sagan. There was some debate at the time with, is it Taylor or Tyler, right? So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I thought that was interesting, too, that Hall's carrying that load.
No, absolutely. Now, the Twitterverse is going to love this, but I'm going to have to be the cloud of darkness to your ray of sunshine because... And part of this is that I've lived in Toronto my entire life, but part of me hated that playoff run last year. The reason is that I worry it set harmful expectations this season, expectations which will prove more detrimental in the long term, because now the expectations, from my perspective, are playoffs, and that restricts Chevy and the management group to possibly having to keep Ladd and Byfuglien.
To a certain extent, I still think we weren't... People in Winnipeg, I still think at this point in time, are more hockey-starved than playoff-starved. And I don't think that you would have seen the pitchforks and torches out last year if the Jets had not made the playoffs. I think that a lot of fans actually saw that playoff run last year as being a nice surprise. And going into this season, I've seen it all over the board in terms of where people think that this team is going to land. I think that now there's an expectation that this should be a playoff team. But again, it's not like we came roaring into the playoffs last year. We were on the bubble, and we got over the hump. And the three seasons before that, we were on the bubble, and we didn't manage to do it. So, I don't know. I think that... I don't think it's the end of the world if they don't make playoffs this year, in terms of the fan base or anything along those lines. I do think that after this season, though, it's going to change because now you've built a young core for 5 years, and that's the core that's supposed to bring you to the promised land. I do agree with you, though, that if you're in that position, it's not as much that the expectation is playoffs, but just that the fact that you're going to be a bubble team again. And are you going to trade your two of your top assets when you're chasing a playoff spot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what we're going to be. It already seems very clear. So at this point, again, I think the only way that Ladd and Byfuglien leave Winnipeg this season is if this team is a bottom 10 team in the NHL, and that's not going to be the case.
Doesn't look like it, no.
So I think it's more of that case that if you're chasing playoffs, you're not going to dump your top assets when that happens. We got 6 days of fun out of it. We got two nice home games. So, you know.
It wasn't all bad. And here's the thing.
You're just Toronto folks until this year. And, you know, they're in playoffs too. They're in playoffs too.
I don't mind that they got swept or that I don't mind the way that it happened. In fact, I think that it can be important for a team, especially a young team, to have that playoff experience first and then go on to greater things. I just wonder about how big the step back is going to be.
I don't know. I don't actually think that there is. And again, you're right. I am the sunshine and rainbows in this room, which is the funny thing. But I think that you have a hell of a team that you've set up here for the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, and here's the thing. I don't know if anyone expected... Well, actually, no, this isn't true. Chicago does seem to have taken at least some of a step back, more than I anticipated. It's very early, but that's the early impression. Anaheim's been a tire fire, and Bruce Boudreau will still soon be coaching another team. What I'm trying to say is that it's very unpredictable, and In fact, you know what? Maybe when I said that Winnipeg would be sixth in the Central and out. But it's proven to be a lot more volatile than that, and they could be as high as third.
Well, before you infect this show and my apartment and Arctic Ice Hockey with all your negativity...
Yep.
I'm saving us.
Oh, don't worry. Hey, it's the first time I'll get torched online. It'll be great.
It might be, and people are going to be like, what the hell's wrong with you, Alan?
It was all Alan's fault.
Oh, you love the Jets now? You know, but that's, you know what, again, I've always said, both positions, when I'm positive or negative, and when you're positive or negative, you know, put some facts behind it, or, you know, put some thought behind it, and either way, you're a fan of the team.
Yep.
I still think. We want the team to be good, and we'll see how good they are.
Well, at least we won today.
Yeah. Yeah, we did win today. A win's a win, right?
Yep.
So, I am Slip on Twitter, Slip with Five Eyes or Slip. We've got Philip A. Ivor over on Twitter, Arctic Ice Hockey on Twitter, www.arcticicehockey.com, and go listen to the Superfans. We've got 6 seconds left. Good night, everyone.